Well, welcome to Laketon Bethel today. As you can tell, I'm not really here. This is being done by video. Just a couple of announcements I wanted to clarify. One is that we have a membership information class after the second service on April 27, and there's sign-up sheets in the entryway for that. And the other announcement is just to remind you the purpose of worship. You know, I'll be in a different church this Sunday. Hopefully, I'll be in Woodland Hills Church in St. Paul, Minnesota. Or by the time you see this video, I'll be heading back to Muskegon. But it's my intention to go there. Greg Boyd is the senior pastor. He is one of my, he's probably my favorite living theologian. And I wanted to check him out. And then also, Easter is just 1 week away. And every church in the county is going to have a great Easter service. And we are too, but we have an added bonus. We have donuts from Wesco. And if you've never had Wesco donuts, it's worth coming just for that. I'd encourage you to do that. The Wesco donuts are beyond compare. And if you are watching this from, say, South Dakota or Utah or wherever it is you're watching it from, it's worth the drive. So come on in and enjoy Easter with us. Now this is Palm Sunday, and it's a Sunday that I chose to not be here. But you know, every year that I've been a pastor, I've struggled with the Palm Sunday theme. I didn't know really what it was all about. So of course I've had to do the history behind it. It was a special day made special during the medieval times by the organized church. Kings liked Palm Sunday, a procession for a king, because, you know, then they could transfer that to themselves. And they're the ones that had all the money, so Palm Sunday became an important part of organized religion. But I want to take a serious look at the narrative with Jesus today. I wanted to make this video under palm trees, and that was my original plan. See, this week is our 39th anniversary. Diane and I have been married for 39 years, and we were going to go to Pensacola, Florida. And I was actually going to make this video under a real palm tree there. But that changed. We decided to see our kids instead. We have five children. One lives nearby in Norton Shores, another one in Chicago, another one in Detroit, another one in Minneapolis, and another one in Holland. And we're going to kind of make the circuit and see our offspring for our 39th anniversary. So I decided I was going to film this thing in Meyer Gardens. And I thought, well, if I go there on Monday morning, I'll have all kinds of space to myself. Michigan has this thing called spring break, and that place was full of kids. There's no way I could make a video there because it was, you know, very crowded. So I just put my palm shirt on and decided to see a few things. Now, there, I did take some pictures of palm trees from Meyer Gardens. If the first slide you're going to see is the slide of the horse. That's very famous there in Meyer Gardens. It's worth a trip just to see that. Then also, the next two slides are real palm trees to give it a little bit of an effect. It's really kind of an amazing place, these Meyer Gardens are. It's amazing what you can buy with when you charge people too much for groceries. No, I didn't say that. But that's where Meyer Gardens is. It's a very good place, and it's fun to see. So today I'm going to talk about Palm Sunday and how it applies to the fears that we all face. You know, we all learn fear as little kids. Think of how when you were a little kid, you were probably afraid of the dark. Many kids are. I was always afraid that the house was going to burn down. I had nightmares of our house burning down. Then when you get a little older, you start fearing other kids. You fear the bullies, and you fear the ridicule that's inevitable that everybody gets. And, you know, I had plenty of that as a kid, and sorry, Sioux Center folks who are listening to that, this, but I had lots of it. You know, imagine me in an environment of people who were athletic and people who were very conservative, just didn't work very well. And then worries transfer as you get older. You worry about making the grade in college. Am I going to actually make it through college? Or you worry about finding a good job and keeping it. Or if you go into the military, will you survive the military? Or if you get married, will you make your marriage work? If you have kids, will your kids turn out? And if they do turn out, will they like you? Some folks get really nervous about traffic. Some folks have fears of hospitals. Some folks have funerals and are afraid of funerals and cemeteries. I was horsing around online and I found this thing on the top 10 fears of 2024 from Chapman University, did a survey on that. And the number one fear was corrupt government officials. Well, I've never really been afraid of that because I just assume government officials are corrupt. Then there's the fear of people you love being seriously ill. Cyber terrorism, I had to look up what that was. People I love dying, that's a real fear. Russia using nuclear weapons, I don't worry much about that. Not having enough money for the future is a constant worry for everyone. The U.S. becoming involved in another world war. North Korea using nuclear weapons, a terrorist attack, or biological warfare. Those are the top 10 fears of 2024. But you know, fear sometimes dominates our lives. And fear is a bad ruler. Fear is a bad king. And it may be time to switch kings. So today we're going to look at the Palm Sunday parade in a different light. I want to retell the parable that Jesus told just before going into the Jerusalem and the Palm Sunday parade. It's one of my favorite parables, and Luke's version, which we are looking at today, is a little different than Matthew's version. And I think the reason for that is Jesus probably told this parable more than once. But it's a story about a nobleman leaving to be crowned king. Now, the first audience that heard this story would see that as normal. Because, as you know, Israel was occupied by the Romans at that time. And quite often what would happen is the Romans would select somebody to be kind of a puppet king under Caesar. And then this person would have to go to Rome to be crowned and then come back and be the official king. So this king is getting ready to go to Rome, and he has 10 servants that he gives 3 months' wages to each and tells them to invest this money while he is gone. Now, people didn't like this nobleman. They didn't want him to become king, and so they grumbled quite a bit about it. But one of the servants took that 3 months' wages and whatever he did with it, he multiplied it times 10. And so when the nobleman came back as king, he said, "Good for you. I'm going to put you in charge of 10 cities. Well done, my good and faithful servant." Second servant made 5 times what the money was worth. And so again, the king said, "I'm going to make you governor of 5 cities. The third servant hid his money in the ground and didn't earn a thing with it. You know what happened to him? Well, the king said, "You are a wicked, lazy servant. You didn't use what I gave you." And he kicked him out. He gave his money, his 3 months' wages, to the one who multiplied it times 10. Now, the point of this parable is that you need to use faith and not fear as the basis for making decisions. I've made a lot of really bad decisions based on fear, and I'm sure many of you can identify with that. The next part of the narrative is the Palm Sunday story. This is from Luke chapter 19. You can read it later if you wish. Here's how this reads. After saying these things, meaning the story of the of the money, Jesus headed straight up to Jerusalem. When he got near Bethphage and Bethany at the mountain called Olives, he sent off two of the disciples with instructions. Go to the village across from you. As soon as you enter, you'll find a colt tethered, one that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it. If anyone says anything, asks, what are you doing? Say, his master needs him. Strange detail. I pondered why in the world that was kept in the story. But here you have the colt of a donkey who's tethered but has never been ridden. That means, in at least in Iowa parlance, he's halter broke but not saddle broke. You could lead him around, but you couldn't get on his back. It would have been really tough to ride this thing unless it was extremely tame, which would be very unusual too. So the passage goes on. It says this: the two left and found it just as he said. As they were untying the colt, its owner said, what are you doing untying the colt? They said, his master needs him. They brought the colt to Jesus, and throwing their coats on its back, they helped Jesus get on. As he rode, the people gave him a grand welcome, throwing their coats on the street. Now imagine throwing coats on the back of an untrained donkey. That would freak the donkey out. He would be scared. He would have a problem with that. But this wasn't then. Jesus was able to get on him and ride him, which is a miracle in itself. Then it says they threw their coats on the street, which was a common custom to welcoming people, especially kings, into their community. Now, again, we have to think about the donkey here for a minute. Donkeys are, you know, not the same as horses, but they have lots of similarities. When I was a kid, I did a lot of things in 4-H with a horse. And one of the things that we had was called a Western pleasure competition, where we'd saddle up our horses and then we had to make them walk and then trot and then canter and see how we did basic horse handling. And then there was kind of an obstacle course. We had to make the horses jump over bales of straw, which wasn't too difficult, and walk through tires and so forth. Now, one of the things that we had to do with this Western pleasure class was make the horse walk over a tarp that was lying on the ground. I had this old mare that I had trained perfectly to do that. I rehearsed it. But the problem was, the Western pleasure competition was at night in an arena, an outdoor arena, and the lights shone down on that tarp, and the tarp looked differently. And that old horse that I had wouldn't have anything to do with that tarp. Nothing I could do to make her go on it. I'd get up to it, she'd start bucking. She did not want to go on that tarp, and so I didn't do very well in the competition. Can you imagine this untrained donkey walking over coats? It just seems like it would be an impossible thing. They'd be skittish to do that. Okay, going on with the story. Right at the crest where Mount Olives begins its descent, the whole crowd of disciples burst into enthusiastic praise over the mighty works they had witnessed. You know, they had witnessed Lazarus being raised from the dead, people being healed, etc., etc. And they said this: blessed is he who comes, the King in God's name. All's well in heaven. Glory in the high places. You know, they just come from seeing Lazarus raised from the dead. But these people were not looking for the kind of leader that Jesus was. They were looking for a military leader. They wanted someone to overthrow Rome. Jesus had no interest in current politics. As he said several times, my kingdom is not of this world. So we're taught how to follow him no matter who's in charge of the government. It is significant to notice, those of you who are politically acute, that he rode a donkey and not an elephant. He rode a donkey instead of a war horse. The generals who came in, the conquering generals, they all rode a war horse that looked kind of like the stallion at the Meyer Gardens. That's what they would have rode in on. Jesus on a humble, small donkey, the colt of a donkey. The narrative goes on like this. It says, some Pharisees from the crowd told him, "Teacher, get your disciples under control." But he said, "If they kept quiet, the stones would do it for them," shouting praise. See, the Pharisees were afraid of Roman reprisal. The Romans kind of let the locals run things unless there was rioting, unless there's unrest, unless things weren't going well. And then they would come in and take care of whoever was supposed to be in charge and put somebody else in charge. So the Pharisees didn't want that to happen. That's what they were afraid of. And they also knew that the Romans ruled by fear. The reason Jesus was crucified is that was a common thing in those days. Public crucifixion, that'll keep the natives in line, is how the Romans were thinking. And so they crucified lots and lots of people. In order to keep these people, serving them out of fear. But Jesus was the king who ruled by love. To Jesus, a leader is a servant. And if the people didn't sing his praise, he said, well, the stones will shout. I couldn't resist putting that in this particular slide here. But Jesus also said other things about his kingdom. One that's from Matthew chapter 11 that we need to look at today. It reads like this. It says, then Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. Fear is a heavy burden to carry. And fear is the devil's invention. Fear is how the devil's governments rule. Fear was how the Romans ruled. Jesus' rule is without fear. So you need to trust him to save you. And trust him to sustain you. And then the fear shrinks. Because this king will give you rest. His burden is light. His only command is to love. So report for duty to him, and you'll find rest for your souls. See, the people of Jerusalem, they wanted Jesus to be a politician. He wanted him to be a political king who would overthrow the Romans. But folks, politicians can't save you. They don't keep their promises. They motivate you with fear and with greed. Don't trust them. Don't believe them. Unless you like living in fear. I mean, they can barely govern. And they want power. And they want riches. And they want headlines. Jesus wasn't about that. And when they found out he wasn't, they crucified him. It angered them even more when he didn't defend himself. He had to go. He was a threat to those who motivate by fear. Now, what this tells me is not to fear anything in this life, because he's got it. You don't have to fear cancer. We've been through that. You don't have to fear anything having to do with health. 40 years ago, I feared my lack of ability to be a pastor. I know there's going to be some remarks about that to this day. But I was very much afraid I was not going to be able to cut it. When I worked for United Parcel, I had fears of my ability to be a delivery driver. We all have fears about money issues. And right now we have fears of our investments going south, or our relationships going south. Those are common fears. and along with, you put that alongside of death, which we're all kind of afraid of. That's, fear of death is a big one for many people. But we can trust Jesus on that one too. He's got that too. So we get in the chair, you know, just as the chair, we trust the chair to hold us up. So we trust Jesus to save us. Trusting him will not solve all of your problems. It just makes going through them much easier because he's with you. As the psalmist says, he walks with us, even through the valley of the shadow of death. Folks, what you need to understand is that the devil is a bully. He wrote the book on bullying. And he has politicians in his pocket, and they rule by fear. You don't need to fear anything. Just follow Jesus. He is the rightful king. He's got this. And you'll find rest and peace for your souls. Let's believe this good news and live in peace.